Welcome to the Gentleman Project Podcast. I'm Corey Moore.
And I'm Kirk Chugg. Today, Brad Barton is our guest on the podcast. Years ago, I sat in a room with Brad and we talked to each other about what's most important in life. And Brad's story has impacted so many people throughout the country. And the way that he tells his story is just flat out awe-inspiring. I know that I mentioned to Brad back when we first met about the Gentleman Project because it was the earliest days of the project. And we ran into each other at a track meet as I was watching my boys run in their first track meet. And Brad Barton, who at the end of this podcast, you'll understand how cool this is hanging out at the junior high track meet for his daughter. And the coolest thing happens when a world record holder shows up at your track meet. You get his advice, and he had a group of kids huddled around him, and he's giving advice to these kids about how to improve. And it's just, it was a fantastic visual of the type of man we have on the podcast today. Brad Barton is a seasoned speaker. He's a coach. He's an author. He's a world record-breaking track athlete. He instructs and inspires organizations all across the country. You've heard of most of them. They're all big Fortune 500 companies in a variety of industries. He has hands-on ideas to increase productivity and record-setting performance. Brad is an athlete of athletes. He's in the Weber State Athletic Hall of Fame. He loves gardening. He's a honey beekeeper and the dad of six kids. So, Brad, thanks for joining us today.
That's actually complicated as well. My wife and I actually have 12, but that'll be part of my story.
Well, we can't wait to hear the story of Brad Barton. The one that I've heard years ago, it has always been a story that I think should be told because it shows grit and determination. Down to its very core, the story of your track performance, your track journey, and setting and achieving these goals. So, Brad, tell us a little bit about how you got involved in track and field and a little bit about your family.
Yeah, so I was raised on a dairy farm in West Layton, learned how to work from my father. I recently spoke for an organization called Chain Breakers, which is talking about domestic abuse. My family had some of that. My grandfather had really an amazing man. I read a book that my uncle wrote about his dad, my grandfather Barton, an amazing man with a really ugly disease called alcoholism. So I was raised in the midst of that. My dad's drug of choice was rage, and good man, good heart, like my grandfather, an incredible man. An amazing story himself, but just got sucked in by this awful disease. And my dad raised us by our backside. Good man. But it was kind of rough. When I was 13, dad traded the dairy farm in West Layton, Utah, for an 1,100 acre cattle ranch near Salmon, Idaho. And I didn't really take to the ranching agriculture very well, because I, for whatever reason, just didn't want to do that. And I was a very poor student, have learning disabilities, lexdexia, as I like to joke about, but serious learning disabilities. And that was very difficult. And so I had a lot of fear and anxiety about my future. And I had a coach in high school, a wrestling coach, that told me I was going to be okay. He gave me some vision for my life of what it could be. I went home and told my dad. Coach told me I could go to college, Dad, and Dad laughed at me. He said, you'd be lucky to graduate high school with your grades. Now, Dad was just pointing out the obvious, and I think it's important for us as fathers to be careful about pointing out the obvious. There's a line here. Let's be speaking not how things are and how things have been and how things probably always going to be. Let's be talking about possibilities. And that's something that my coach stood into that father figure place and spoke the language of possibility and had these stories for my life. He taught me that if I wanted to change my story, and I really did, badly did, then I've got to change my stories. And this notion of how stories impact a person in their formative years, especially, but all throughout our lives, we have stories running through our heads. And in some cases, they're very few syllables long, right? These stories, we're constantly being bombarded by outside stories and an internal dialogue. Those stories create our view of reality. And then that reality, it boots on the ground. That's how we perform. So this coach taught me that I could be more. I went back to school the next day and I said, give it up. Coach, Dad said I could never go to college. And he just said, you have no idea who you are. If you work hard enough, you could win a state championship. They'd give you a scholarship. They would pay for your school. I liked my coach's version of my life better than my dad's. And if, for me. And so with no guarantee of success, I decided to try it and work as hard as anyone else in the state of Idaho. And in a sport that I was even better at, I won a state championship, got a scholarship to go down to Weber State College at that point. I met another incredible mentor. I started my career as a substance abuse prevention specialist. And one of the models is called asset building. Asset number three is getting your kids around three or more non-parent adults. Now think about this for a minute, dads. Our children having exposure to three people that aren't us, right? Because dads are supposed to love their kids and the moms are supposed to love their boys. But what if somebody else starts saying those things to them? For me, I had a couple of high school coaches and then one religious leader. He was my young men's president, basically a youth pastor, right? In other terms, these three men filled in for what my dad didn't have, some of the skill sets he didn't have, bringing that heart to his role. They helped me to become better. And this college coach pulled me aside and told me I could go to make the U.S. Olympic team. I liked the story. I didn't like how much work it was going to take, but you know what? I even grew to love the work and ultimately was ranked in the top 20 in the world in the 3,000 meter steeplechase. Did not make the U.S. Olympic team. That's a long, kind of a sick and sorry tale. Was too injured in Atlanta to make the Atlanta Games in 96. So I married a girl on the track team at Weber State, and we made some really fast kiddos. So we had six children together, and I started working as a drug prevention specialist, and then quit my day job 10 years later, and been speaking full time ever since, and having a blast. So that kind of gives you a sketch of my life.
Well, that's killer. So let's go back to when this coach told you, you know, you can create your own story, or you thought in your own mind, I can create my own story or stories. Maybe elaborate on that a little bit more. How does that journey start? How do you start trusting that I can create different stories? And then how do you go about that?
Well, let's go back to the quote that coach gave me. He says, if you want to change your story, you've got to change your stories, right? You've got to change the things that you're saying to yourself. And if you'd indulge me, this is kind of a strange request, but I'm going to ask your listeners and all of you right here, just to focus in right here and then answer, just engage with a little activity with me. Answer a very simple question, lightning fast. Kirk, Corey, answer the question. What color is an orange?
Orange.
Okay, this is straightforward, just out loud. What color is an orange?
Orange.
Orange.
Do it a little bit crisper, and I'm going to invite your listeners to do the same thing. What color is an orange?
Orange.
Okay, very good. Now, I'm going to invite you to repeat a word a few times, and let's kind of get a little bit faster as we go. And if you're driving, listen to the podcast, whatever you're doing, just out loud, please. And invite you to actually engage in this. So out loud, say this word, and then I'll ask you a different question, and I'm going to invite you to fire off the answer. Just the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready? Here we go. Ready? Yeah. The word is white.
White.
So let's repeat the word white.
White. White.
Listeners, say white. white. Hey, what do cows drink?
Milk.
Actually, no. And I hope
we both did it.
We did it. Grass.
Into this, listener, as you're doing this, did you say white? Were you tempted to say white? Now think about this. This is a one. We basically did story time, didn't we? I invited you to repeat a one word story, and you say that a few times. You get that one word story thrown through your head. White. And then life served you up a decision to make. Corey, how'd you do?
Pretty bad.
How'd you do, Corey? How'd you do, listener? Hey, because the story was in our head, it informed how we saw the question. And it certainly informed the answer. And now here we are saying just crazy things. How often have you and I done something that was ungentlemanlike because the story that we had running through our head at the time, right? We're annoyed in traffic. And so our children get to see us doing something that's untoward and not acting like a gentleman and giving someone the right of way or, you know, some kind of expletive or some gesture because we have this annoyed story running through our head, right? And then 1,000 versions of that. Let's remember the gentleman project is really inside of me, right? That's who this is for. I am becoming more and more and more a gentleman, right? And all the things that entails, I tell my kiddos, I call them gentlemen and gentlewomen, right? I call my little kids, because I think it's just beautiful. I am genteel. What does that mean, right? There's nobility in that. There's this notion of nobility, you know, kings, queens, right? That's what I kind of get ahead of myself here about what my definition of the gentleman's what of gentleman is, but make sure that we understand the power of story and who we become by degrees is the stories we allow we can't decide the waves that hit the shore, right? The thoughts happen, right? But we do decide which of those thoughts and these stories we allow to perform to perform on our stage, or the ones we decide that we're going to surf, the waves we're going to surf, right? So let's surf these beautiful stories, waves, not only for ourselves, but for other people. When we see our children doing something that's not, you know, gentlemanlike, right? What are the story that is running through our head as we experience that? And are we going to choose to break the chain of abuse in my case, right? My family's case. Am I going to ask questions and be curious about what's going on here? Or am I just going to go straight to annoyed? So does that help?
That was fantastic.
Yeah. Great answer. Will you tell us a little bit about how your family went from 6 kids to 12 kids?
Well, speaking of sick and sorry tales, living a wonderful life and having a great time, having literally pinching myself, just loving my life. And my family had a tragedy. We suffered a really bad tragedy, and it's not my kiddo's mom's fault. There was some things that happened in that I was supposed to be protector of my kids, and kind of a tough thing, but there's some evil things done. And my kid's mom and I, she couldn't be married anymore. So I found myself very unhappily single. And after many years of struggle, that was my situation. So I got on match.com, baby. Nice. And I found Melissa, and I've come with 2 sons and 4 daughters. And Melissa has 4 sons and 2 daughters. So we have a half dozen of each. And that's been a really fun thing to accept this role, not only as a father many years ago, but now as a stepfather, a bonus dad, as my kiddos call me. So that's kind of neat to have that many children.
So my question to you is, I loved how you explained, you know, creating your own story and kind of believing your own story. I always tell my kids, what you think about, you bring about, which I think I stole from Napoleon Hill, but which is in that same vein of, hey, what you're thinking about, what you believe you can achieve. Right. And so how did you inspire, how did you teach your kids that, or how are you, right? Like, how did you influence them, or how do you talk to them in a certain way? Or do you sit down with them and say, let's talk about your dreams, or let's talk about your story, or let's, you know, are there ways in which you've influenced either your own kids or people in your lives? Maybe you're that, you know, that second adult somewhere in your life. What do you say to these kids? How do you inspire them to understand? Or maybe you do what you did with us.
Yeah, well, my kids have been raised with their dad on a stage speaking, and they've heard me speak many, many times. So there's very little tolerance for the lecture. So that I find that unproductive. There's jokes about the family. Oh, dad's doing it again, right? I really find, as most of us dads do, that the best way is why we're doing something, why we're working. I love to garden. It's a wonderful way to teach my kids how to get their hands dirty and get their hearts clean, right? That gardening is just amazing. There's hiking. There's for me and my children, running has been a ritual as well. And it's fun to even my really quiet son, someone that's not very expressive. We get them get on a run together, and it's just awesome to be able to connect and bond that way. So, what are you doing, Dad, as a way to bond with your kids that has some movement to it? I guess is my question for your listener. What are you doing that you can more naturally have that mentorship role flow rather than just sitting down and having a heart to heart or an interview with your kids? Although that some people that works really well for me, it never has. So beekeeping is something that's my family does. And it's been fun to see, about half of our 12 children are interested in beekeeping. I got one of my sons that is going to go to 100 hives. You know, he wants to make this a side hustle as he's building his computer programming career. And we've just bond, and it's just awesome. So that's one way to do that, is just on the move, I think is an important element.
So what else have you done with your kids to bond and to, you know, have these moments of teaching that feel natural?
Once again, my kids have grown up seeing me on a stage. They've heard lots of stories about, you know, how fast their dad used to be, you know, and going to the, you know, banquets. And when I was inducted, the Weber State Hall of Fame, they're just a little tired of that. And, it wasn't a conscious decision, because I was called. It was bigger than just a conscious decision. I was supposed to do this hard thing. But looking back, I think that might have been part of it. I wanted my children to see their dad doing something really hard, rather than just hearing the stories about when I was a younger man. For them to see me on the track again and coming home, you know, and just being obliterated after a very difficult workout, and just laying in agony for a day or two, my post-nasal drip from abusing my cardiovascular system. My kids have seen me do hard things in this calling that I had to come back to the track. I think it's pretty informative. My kiddos are going to go through some really tough things in their life as well. You know, God forbid, you know, marriage problems or financial problems, employment, whatever. They're going to be able to look back and say, my dad taught me some great things, but the most important things he taught me, isn't what he said, it's what he did. I saw him do hard things. And if my dad can do that, dang it, maybe I can accomplish this hard thing in front of me. So dads, let's be willing to do hard things. I teamed back up with my college coach. He had been retired. His name is Chick Hislop, one of the most famous track coaches in the world. I was the USA track and field Hall of Famer. He is an Olympic coach in 96 when the Olympic Games came to America. That man really helped me a ton. And I love one of his philosophies. He says, every one of us deserve to wake up every morning a little scared. Now, I'm not sure that scared is the right word. Frightened, maybe, a little anxious, perhaps, because you are involved currently in something so difficult that you're not sure you can get through the day. And I just love that notion. You know, it's so easy to get homework, and we're just going through the motions in our lives. And we wake up 5 years later and you think, well, where did all that go? And you wonder, you know, if this is all worth it, because even though life is hard, what are you doing that's pushing the boundaries of your excellence? When was the last time you found yourself on the steep, steep part of the learning curve? What have you been doing lately that your kids can see you having a real zest for life? And I think that's an important element of my story, was my kids seeing me doing something super hard.
Yeah. And so I want to hear this story, and I want you to tell this story for our listeners to hear, because it's an incredible story. Will you talk to us about your decision to come back to run outside of your prime years of life, what your goal was, and then what happened in that journey to one, own the records, and two, the difficulties that you had in achieving those, because I know it did not come easy.
Right. There's a bit of folksy wisdom that Coach taught me once fairly early on in this process. He said, Brad, you are going to have to do maybe 1,000 very difficult things in order to get in position to break a world record. So you can either make 1,000 tough decisions to do those hard things, or maybe you can just make one great big holy cow decision, just one set, firm, committed decision to do all 1,000 of them. You do that and it will cut your workload literally in half, because now all you have to do is just go do the 1,000 hard things. That's pretty wise counsel for us fathers to have in our, you know, our pail of wisdom that we can dispense to our kiddos. Let's live with decided hearts. Let's be, you know, in a religious terms, I call it living as a covenant man, right? Are you living as a covenant man? Are you teaching your sons to live as a covenant man? Whatever that is, you're making promises, right? Covenants to your family, to your God, to yourself, to your spouse. Let's make a decision once and for all that we will live and do these difficult things and take responsibility, live in a place of responsibility. One of my favorite authors, M. Scott Peck, he says, billions daily. Love this quote. And I'm going to slow it down because it's so good. Billions daily, that's basically all of us, attempt to avoid the pain of responsibility. Attempt, because we can't never do it. We're going to suffer responsibility one way or the other, right? Billions daily attempt to avoid the pain of responsibility by escaping from freedom. Right. So when we're running away from the pain of responsibility, we are giving up the very thing we want the most. We want freedom. Life is hard. Life is pain, Highness, right? To quote a timeless a cinema classic. Right. Anyone telling you difference trying to sell you something. So what if we came to grips with this notion, and we taught our children to come to grips with this notion that the hard way is the easy way. And the easy way is almost always the hard way. Try that one on just about any scenario. My high school coach taught me this. The hard way is the easy way. Yeah, you want an easy life, you got to do hard things. You want a hard life, go do the easy things. And once again, that in just about every scenario in life, that is true. And so here I found myself at a high school track meet, and I saw the coach's mile contested, these old gray haired guys. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, what, you know, I could do that. And then as they're running this indoor mile race, I'm thinking, well, I could do that. And then I got called. And dads, when have you been called to do something like really from your heart? You knew you're supposed to do this. Maybe it doesn't even make any sense, but I knew by the time when these old gray-haired balding guys were turning that last turn and the lines of pain etched in their faces and they're struggling to the finish line, I knew that I was supposed to come back to track and field. And I told my wife, and she says, well, you don't have time for that. She knows that, you know, how I'm built. I don't have a fruit tree. I've got 20 of them. I don't have a couple of beehives in my backyard. I've got 100 of them, right? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it all the way. And she was right. I didn't have time for this, but I knew I had to do it. And so I got back on the track and I ran a mile in 4:43 and ripped my quad. And a year later, I ran 4:32 and then I ripped my quad. I called my retired college coach and I said, coach, the world record's 4:20.19. What do you think? He says, I think it's time to come out of retirement, you and me, and let's go do something that's never been done. And all those years just faded away. And I was a starry-eyed college kid in his office saying, yeah, we can go to Barcelona, baby, right? We're going to go make the Olympic team. Let's go do something that's never been done. And it was difficult. We worked for months and months and months before he ever let me race. I raced and ran 4:26. 2 weeks later, I ran 4:23. 2 weeks later, he broke my foot. It was a stress fracture, right? Man. What do you think, coach? He says, well, maybe we figured out why that's a 30-year-old world record we're trying to break. What? Maybe someone as old as you can't train hard enough to run any faster than John Hinton did, 4:20.19. Now I got a broken heart to go with my broken foot. And then he says, or maybe it can be done, and I just haven't figured it out yet. And this is a wonderful a piece right here. The environment has changed, he said. We figured out that I can't train you like a college kid at 46 years old. Because the environment has changed, I've got to change the way I approach this. Dads, the environment has changed. This is not the same world that you and I grew up in. Just the smartphone things, right? These things are changing the world. They're changing the way your kids, literally their brains are coming together. They will have different brains. They're cyborgs. We're raising cyborgs. Their brains are physically, the neurons are physically set up different. They're hooking up differently than our brains did when we were that age. We've got to keep on the cutting edge and listen to a podcast about it. We got to read a book about it. Let's figure out how these kids think differently than we did and change our parenting. At the same time, going back to the old principles and the values that we know that are timeless, right? Live those ourselves and let's let our kids experience those things with us and encourage them to do hard things. Let them know that they can do hard things as well. And let's roll up our sleeves and do hard things with them.
Now, you didn't finish quite the story. You broke your foot, and then what?
So
then you started training differently, right?
Yes, we did. And the next year, came back and ran a 4:26 in Pocatello. And one thing we did differently, we decided that we're going to race with college kids because there's no masters guys that are fast enough to race with in the world. I ran 4:21 in Boise. You sent me to Boston for my first record attempt with a terrible head cold. I ran 4:24, got one last shot in Ithaca, Cornell. I fell in the second lap of this race, separated my shoulder, jumped up, ran as hard as I could, ran 4:28. I was destroyed. It was 30 minutes before I could call my coach on the stairwell, the quietest place I could find. I called my coach and I was emotional. I was a wreck physically. And I was so discouraged. I called my coach and I said, coach, I can't do this. It's too hard. My coach shoots back. Remember what we're doing here. I'm like, ugh. We're doing stuff that's never been done. He says, that's right. He says, if this was easy, it would have already been done. And I'm like, I hate this man, right? Because he's always right. And then he says, get back on the plane and get back to Ogden. We'll get Doc Sharman, look at your shoulder. I'm personal friends with a Columbia coach. I will get you in that last chance meet in Uptown Manhattan. Let's get it done 2 weeks from tonight at the Armory. And that's what we did. 416.83 was our first world record.
Whoa.
at 47, came back the next year, doubled my mileage. Came back the next year and took 9.5 seconds off the indoor 3,000 meter world record. Got injured again. Came back, had one shot at the steeplechase world record at Vanderbilt in Nashville. Ran a steeplechase, 3,000 meter steeplechase so fast it would have won the Big Sky Conference.
No way.
The WAC conference and the Mountain West conferences that year. The time was so fast that it was formally submitted to the world governing body and rejected. You can't make this up. This is so good. There was an inquiry made. The email that they came back with, it must have been on a Google Translate because the wording was a little bit strange. Dear Mr. Barton, please forgive us. When we programmed the computer that handles the data for the world records, we programmed it such that it would reject any times that are unrealistic. Guys, their computer store, the stories that their computer was following, that they programmed, the story they programmed, precluded my record. The time was so fast, right? They said,
we've
done some additional research and we verified your fine performance. Please formally resubmit. It will be accepted this time. And congratulations on your new M45 3,000 meter steeplechase world record. Because we broke their dang computer, right?
that is so cool.
Because my coaches over the years had programmed my computer, right? The defaults that I was under, right? Our kids have defaults and some of them are great and some of them are not. And some of the not great defaults are because we lost our temper once, Dad, right? Some of the not great defaults is because we told instead of asked when our kids needed some correction, right? We got preachy instead of asking the right questions. And they made some decisions about themselves and what they're capable of. Maybe we pulled some hard thing away from them and says, well, let me help you with that. Let me handle it for you. And we teach them by doing that, that they are not equipped to handle this difficult world that they're living in. Dads, let's remember that to be on the lookout for these poorly set defaults that our kids have, right? That our young men have, and help them. Probably with persuasion, maybe with stories, and maybe questions. Maybe we can question our kids into changing some of their defaults, so that they can accept some of these hard things. Anyway, those are three of the four world records that we broke.
Do you want to mention the fourth one? I'm curious.
Well, I got to do a quick story. I was 48, almost 49 when we broke that last record. Masters records are kept in 5-year increments. I'm almost 50, guys, right? We're going to destroy the M50 world records. We figured we'd have 9 in them. We're going to get 9 of them, at least 9. And so I took badly needed 6 months of rest, very slow trajectory to 50 years old. I was super fit. In fact, I'd run within a second and a half of the indoor 3,000 meter world record. It was maybe 6 weeks before I turned 50. I was that fit. Then I shattered my toe on speaking assignment in Mexico. Well, months later, I'd gone through a whole training cycle, got back to world record fit, and then I broke my foot, a stress fracture. Well, months later, I was all back to world record fit again. And each of these are months long training cycles. I took a wicked fall and injured my head, a concussion. Months later, I'm world record fit again, and I broke my toe. Months later, I'm world record fit. I ripped my quad. Months later, I'm world record fit. I took another really weird, freaky fall, and gave myself another concussion. It still bothers me. I have a word recall problems. You probably have maybe noticed. Guys, I was 53 years old and I was done. I called my coach one day and I said, "Coach, every step is a struggle. I don't feel it anymore. I don't feel called anymore." And coach said, "Yeah, it's okay, Brad. You don't have anything to prove. We got 3 world records. We've got 5 American records." You know, it was basically a 10-minute kumbaya. You know, "I love you, man. Well, I love you too." Just to getting off the phone, "Let's keep in touch, buddy." And then he says, "Could I just ask you one more question as we're hanging up?" I'm like, "Oh, God, here it comes." He says, "Why were you doing this?" And I says, "What do you mean?" "So, well, we've been working now for nearly 4 years on the M50 project. Why were you doing it?" And I said, "Well, I thought we were going to run as fast as we could, coach." He says, "That's not good enough. What specifically was your goal?" And I couldn't answer him. I said, "I don't know, coach." He says, "Well, right there might be the problem." Now, I'm telling you a track story, guys, a master's track story. What questions should we be asking our sons to get them to thinking, right? And I said, "I don't know, coach." He says, "Well, don't quit training yet. Just keep after it and answer that question. Why were you doing this?" And so I promised I would. I called him back a couple of weeks later and I said, and I'm going to paraphrase, "Dang you, coach," is how I started the conversation. He starts laughing. "What's the matter?" And I said, "I'm excited again. I figured out exactly what I want to do with this thing. I want to break Nolan Shahid's M50 mile world record. Coach, no human being over 50 years old has ever run faster than 4 minutes, 25 seconds. The world record's 4:25.04. Nolan Shahid, 18 years ago. He says, "Now we're talking." And I was excited again. And it was 3 months and I think 11 days from that phone call. I stood on a starting line at Vanderbilt University, Nashville, Tennessee, almost five years to the same weekend that I ran that fast steeple. I ran a mile in 4 minutes and 19 seconds, 0.56. One of the articles that were written, Times of San Diego sports writer, after listening to my story, he just, he entitled it "Brad Barton's Book of Job." From ceaseless injuries to world record at 53, you know, an M50 world record. The joke inside the Masters world is that world records are set when there's still some smoke in the air from the birthday candle, right? When you turn 45 or 50 or 55. Yeah. And here I was at nearly 55 when we did this. Guys, the idea of getting through, if you know what you're doing, right? Then the rest of it is just are just details, right? If you understand why you're doing this. So let's help our kids deal with the challenges, but let's help them to identify their value systems, right? And keep those values that they've identified in front of them, right? Do they have a personal mission? Do they have a top 5 values in their lives? Let's keep those values front and center for our kids. And let's also help them identify what their why is and then keep coming back to their why, because that will get them through medical school, right? It'll get them through a race. It'll get them through the dating years. It'll get them through, you know, addiction, whatever it is. If the why is powerful enough, you know, Simon Sinek talks about start with why. I think it's a great idea for dads to start with why as well.
Well, that was inspiring. And I'm going to have my kids listen to this one. And every time I say that, that means it's a really good podcast, by the way, Brad. But we're out of time, unfortunately. But you started down the road of telling us what it means to you to be a gentleman. Maybe you could elaborate on what it does mean for you to be a gentleman.
Well, as I said, I believe that this notion of being genteel, that's nobility, right? We're kings and queens, and we are, that's who we are really. Right. And I have some spiritual beliefs that we've got, you know, some deity in our DNA as well. So that's one of the things I teach my kiddos. What is your version of that? Right. That you're part of this huge universe. That's amazing. Let's tie our kids in with something that's bigger. Let them know that they are bigger than just the sum of their parts. I think is part of being genteel. Some values that come to mind, integrity. I think gentlemen are integrous. A gentleman, they mean what they say and they do what they say. So this notion of integrity. I think that gentlemen value the genteel of womanhood as well. And that's an important aspect as well. What are you doing, son, to honor the role of womanhood? I think that that speaks just volumes about who I am as a gentleman. And then this notion of taking responsibility. I think gentlemen take responsibility as well. So that's my short answer.
Thank you, Brad.
Great answer.
Yeah, so wonderful stuff. One that you can listen to multiple times. Brad can be reached on his website, bradspeaks.com. If you want an inspiring person to come and speak to your group, your company, Brad is another one of those people who just is a fantastic, fantastic speaker. When he gets up, you'll leave that room inspired by his grit and his integrity. I will end this by telling the backstory of the podcast that we're recording today. If you want to know what kind of a guy you've listened to today, Brad has COVID right now. And we decided to do the podcast anyway. And he hasn't felt well at all, but we had made this appointment. He said, let's do it. Let's just do it remotely. I don't want to get you guys sick. This is a guy that sets a goal and he sticks to it. He does what he says. And I just fantastic podcast today. Thank you for joining us, Brad. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure, Kirk. Corey, thank you very much for this good that you're doing in the world. And thanks for your listeners as well to have the willingness to invest in themselves and their sons.
Thanks, Brad. If you haven't joined us on social media, or if you haven't subscribed to the podcast quite yet, please hop over to Apple Podcasts or whatever platform that you consume your podcasts on, and like and subscribe to us. Drop us a review if you enjoy the podcast. That sure helps us out, and we really appreciate it. Have a great week. I'm Kirk Chugg.
And I'm Corey Moore. Thank you, everyone. We'll be right back.